Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature an exit interview of sorts with Jeff Freeman, the departed president of the American Gaming Association, on his 5 years at the helm of the Principal Gaming PAC in Washington, D.C. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos and now sports betting in North America. For more information, visit iGamingPlayer.com/join. Jeff Freeman departed the American Gaming Association as of August 1st, but his 5-year tenure at the AGA will continue to resonate. Taking over for a legend, the first and long-serving CEO Frank Fahrenkopf, Freeman fundamentally changed how the AGA was structured and conducted operations. Not as politically connected as Fahrenkopf, the former head of the Republican Party, Freeman focused on expanding membership, creating alliances, and finally on the drive for legalized sports betting. His interview was part of the cover story for the August issue of GGB, which focused on the future of the American Gaming Association. He spoke with me at the AGA offices in June. Jeff Freeman, thanks for joining us on the podcast. A little bittersweet here. I was with you in the beginning when you first got here, and I think you've done a great job. But you're leaving on to better things, I hope, and you're leaving us alone. So I want to talk about some of the things that that has happened here during your term as president. And now let's start with what you think your legacy will be.
Let me start by saying thank you to you. When I did take this job, you were one of the first meetings I had out in Las Vegas, and it was all about a listening tour, trying to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the organization, what the future might hold for the organization. You put me in a room with guys like Bob Fess and others in the industry who I could learn from. That was a great opportunity for me, and we wouldn't have been able to modernize the AGA were it not for some of the feedback we got in those early days. So thank you for that. As far as legacy, I mean, heck, I've been here 5 years. It's hard to have a legacy after 5 years, and I recognize that. I think that we've done some very good things that I'm most proud of in terms of unifying the industry. Mm-hmm. As we all know, this organization originally was more of a Las Vegas-centric organization. Mm-hmm. Forget tribes. The organization initially didn't have suppliers. It later brought suppliers on. But the suppliers felt that they were brought on not because they shared an agenda, mm-hmm. but rather because the organization wanted their money.
Right.
The organization didn't represent regional casino operations. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it didn't represent tribes.
Right.
We've changed that. And we've built an organization that I think effectively represents the totality of the industry. My attitude here, my attitude at any association, and indeed the next one that I'm going into, which has some related problems, is you can't say you represent the industry if you don't represent the industry. Mm-hmm. You need to have people around the table. And I remember early on Gary Lubman saying to me that if we can't get 6 people to agree, how are we going to get 36 people to agree? And I think one of the great ironies in association management is that when people feel that they have a seat at the table, when they feel that their voice is heard, when they feel that there isn't somebody else on the inside or outside trying to, for lack of a better word, screw them, mm-hmm. their ability to find consensus is greater.
Right.
We've seen that. We've enjoyed that. So I'm proud of the unity. I'm proud of the consensus. I'm extraordinarily proud of the team that we've built here. You've gotten to know that team.
Sure.
Those are the things that I'm most proud of.
Great. Let's talk about some of the issues that have come up during your term. I think the most disturbing one was in 2013 at G2E when the head of FinCEN criticized the industry for its lack of transparency in currency transactions. In the past, the industry probably would have fought back and been negative about that. But you decided to address it head on and make the necessary changes. What kind of inspired that?
Yeah, that was Jennifer Shasky-Calvary, and she said that the industry didn't take its anti-money laundering compliance responsibilities seriously. Her terms were probably even more stark than that.
Right.
And it was a wake-up call for the industry. Yeah. It was also on the heels of LVS having a fine from FinCEN. Right. There was a real issue here that we had to address. My feeling with, in general, is transparency is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Engagement is a good thing.
Right.
And that's the approach that we took with FinCEN. Mm-hmm. What is it you're trying to solve? What are the issues at play? What is it you don't think we do? Okay, let's learn from one another. We want to learn what your goals are. Let us show you how we're operating. Let's be transparent. Let's be engaging. And that approach on that issue worked very effectively. And it worked because the companies, not because of AGA,
right. mm-hmm.
it worked because the companies were willing to try a different style. Mm-hmm. And they opened their doors. I remember bringing in FinCEN to Wynn, where they went into right. a high-limit mm-hmm. room, where they watched how everything was done to track the activity.
Mm-hmm.
And they walked out of there thinking, wow, this is more than we realized was mm-hmm. being done. On top of that, the industry was willing to adopt some best practices
mm-hmm.
on money laundering compliance. Best practices that FinCEN would share with other industry groups and say, why aren't you doing this?
Right.
So because of the engagement and transparency from the industry, mm-hmm. we're now seen by FinCEN as a model for other aspects of the financial services sector. And I think that same approach worked in other areas. It worked on resort fees. It worked on mm-hmm. Other issues that we address. Let's be transparent. Let's be engaging. Let's say to government, not leave us alone,
right.
which may have been a past
right.
mm-hmm. approach, but to say, what are you trying to accomplish and how can we help you get there?
Okay.
I'm thrilled we took that approach
mm-hmm.
And thrilled with the results.
Well, another area where that, I guess that approach works was with the IRS when they tried to lower the threshold of a reporting from 1,200 to 600, despite the fact that 1,200 had been established in the late 70s.
Yep.
And you know, when you add inflation into that, it's a ridiculous amount now. So how did the industry come together and what was your strategy to stop that?
Yeah, the great thing there was, and it's important for everyone to realize, on that issue in particular, tribal gaming and commercial gaming worked together very closely.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke with one voice as to why that approach was not an informed approach. But we also, the same thing we had done with FinCEN, IRS, help us what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Help us understand what it is
right.
you're trying to accomplish. Help us understand where you think the risk is.
Mm-hmm.
Let us help you understand what our capabilities are. You know, they also wanted to use loyalty marketing cards as a way right. of tracking player mm-hmm. activity.
Right.
So we had a lot of listening we needed to do. And fortunately, they were willing to listen and learn as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the same type of engagement, the same type of transparency. In addition to that, we drove thousands of industry employees mm-hmm. and others, customers, to write letters to the IRS and express their displeasure. And not only did the IRS resist the temptation to lower the threshold, we are having discussions right now within
right.
the IRS and on Capitol Hill to raise that slot tax threshold. You know, that's an issue that's not unique to us. There are a
right.
lot of things in federal code
mm-hmm.
that were put in place in the 70s and the 80s that all need to be adjusted for inflation. Even the currency transaction reporting on the AML side set at $10,000, and I believe that number was from the 1970s as well.
Right.
So we're working with the Chamber of Commerce and looking at a whole redo within the federal code and adjusting things for inflation.
Okay.
And that could have a great benefit for us.
Great benefit, absolutely. So let's talk about the membership drive. As you said, there were some companies that were resistant, that they thought, you know, we can't agree now. How are we going to agree with a lot more people on the board? But that was a reason to be more inclusive. Did you get a lot of pushback there? And you know, you had a real big success adding new people to the board.
You know, fortunately, we didn't get a lot of pushback there. Mm-hmm. I think we get questions,
yeah,
and people
sure.
have reasonable concerns. What does this mean for
mm-hmm.
me? Fortunately, particularly at the CEO level, people
right.
were looking big picture
mm-hmm.
and understood the benefits of diversifying and representing the totality of the industry. So I feel very good about that.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, the concern that we would hear, and even might hear today to a degree, is if I'm a longtime AGA member, I don't feel like I have as much power as
mm-hmm.
I once did.
Right.
And I guess there's some truth to power if you look at it as you were one of six, you were one of 10, and now
right.
you're one of 50.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that. The thing that I encourage these members to keep in mind is outcomes are more important than power.
Right.
Your ability to drive a position in a board meeting is one thing.
Yeah.
Your ability to go achieve that position on Capitol Hill or in the agencies or elsewhere is a whole other thing.
Right.
And I don't think anybody can argue with the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
The outcomes on slot tax, on AML, on resort fees, on sports betting, where we've engaged as an industry in a collective fashion, we're winning. Mm-hmm. And that's what should be most important across the board.
Yeah, no question. You also brought on a lot of tribes that raised a lot of eyebrows, certainly in Indian country. But you seem to have a great relationship with NIGA, with Chairman Stevens over there. Where does that stand now? Is there still any lingering feelings there, or is everybody pretty much copacetic with what's happening?
Well, you know, two things on tribal gaming. One, it's an industry worth more than $30 billion.
Right.
Number two, when you speak to the average consumer, when I speak to the average person on Capitol Hill, they don't delineate between tribal casinos that they went to and commercial casinos. It's all casinos to them.
Right.
So the first thing you have to accept is if you want to keep out $30 billion, you're going to have to swim upstream in trying to get people to understand why your industry is different than that industry. You got a big, big hill to climb in that respect. I believe we have more in common than we do that divides us. Don't get me wrong, we have things that divide commercial gaming and tribal gaming. We have things that divide commercial gaming and commercial gaming.
Right.
There are always going to be battles.
Sure.
But what we can accomplish when we're working together is worth
working
together. And that's been our point. I think things right now are as good as they've been. We have two members, for the first time ever, two members of Tribal Gaming, Seminole Hard Rock and the Chickasaw Nation, on the executive committee of the AGA, not just on the board, but on the executive committee. Tremendously productive in their participation. So I think the comfort level is only becoming greater, and the opportunities are only becoming greater in terms of what we can accomplish when we're working together.
And I think the similarities are much, much more appropriate and much more widespread than the differences. Certainly there are, you know, the tribal casinos answer to a different constituency when it comes to the tribal members, and commercial casinos have shareholders, but there's still, you know, generally similarities.
Well, what I would add to that is, keep in mind, we now have 12 tribes in the organization.
Right.
The Oklahoma tribes, the Connecticut tribes, the California tribes for the most part. I don't know that AGA is relevant to all tribes.
Right.
In fact, I think that AGA and our mission is relevant to the biggest tribes. Mm-hmm. And those are the folks who are in AGA today.
Right.
I don't necessarily see a lot of expansion with tribal gaming in AGA.
Right.
But when you look at those 12 big guys, they share the interest in commercial gaming. They share the interest in terms of innovation, in terms of potential expansion opportunities. And as you know, one of the things I know you see in your business, we see in our business, as you begin to tear down the walls and you put people in the same room and you start working together, you find that you can do it pretty productively. Mm-hmm. It's when you have these fears of what the other side might be like without really talking.
Right.
Now that we're talking, I think everyone is finding it to be worthwhile.
Right, great. So early on, there was a little bump in the road when it came to online gaming. There's a lot of diverse opinions in the industry, and that was one issue that there were some pretty strongly held opinions. How did you navigate that minefield? Because it's almost inevitable that it was going to happen, and we really had to you had to figure out how to go through that down that road there.
Well, I didn't navigate it very well at first. you know, I came in and I knew the AGA had a position of supporting federal online poker only online, and I made the mistaken assumption that position was a shared position across the board, not shared by LVS per se, but shared by the board members. Mm-hmm. And I didn't appreciate the fact that a position didn't necessarily mean a passion.
Right.
So what was eye-opening to me was not the opposition. Mm-hmm. Eventually from LVS and Wynn. And it wasn't the support that was eye-opening, Caesars and MGM in particular.
Right.
It was the amount of ambiguity, disinterest in the middle.
Right.
A lot of members just didn't either care or hadn't yet determined what online gaming would mean for them, and therefore they didn't have the energy for a big fight.
Right.
So, you know, lesson learned on my part that you've got to understand the passion even more than you understand the position. As we dug into that, as we learned that a lot of that passion wasn't there, you know, I was at ICE in February of 2014, and it was I left on Super Bowl Sunday, which was the day that John Ralston ran an interview with Steve Wynn, where Steve said, "I'm going to oppose online gaming too," and may have had a couple different reasons for why he did that. But it didn't take long from that interview running to me getting calls from more than five different board members saying, we're out.
Right.
We don't want to be in a fight between these two big ones.
Right.
And that's why I often say that the LVS position is overstated when it comes to online gaming and the effect that it has. What isn't appreciated is those that were in the middle that just didn't have the appetite for a bruising battle.
Right.
And because of that, and you know, with Jim Murren's leadership saying, let's step away, we were able to reorient our attention to issues where we could find common cause and go get things done.
Right. Okay. So that really became your signature there, is find the common cause and kind of avoid the divisive ideas. I mean, that seems to be the common thread through all these issues.
Indeed it is. Now, finding common cause is not... common cause doesn't necessarily just happen organically.
Right, sure.
There needs to be a process with it. And the truth was, on online gaming, we couldn't put that genie back in the bottle.
Right.
The way AGA developed its position on online gaming was pretty insular. It wasn't an inclusive process. It wasn't a transparent process. And there were a lot of bruised feelings that I wasn't going to be able to change.
Sure, right.
Whereas you take an issue like sports betting, where we all saw daily fantasy sports emerging in late 13, early 14, and we knew it was time to ask a question. What is our attitude about this?
Right.
What is our attitude about sports? Should we take a more progressive approach? You know, we spent all of 2014. We weren't on Capitol Hill lobbying. We weren't out there talking about sports betting. But we were working with the industry to do the econometric studies, to do other elements of research here, to determine what should our point of view be on this issue going forward. We had all the right people around the table, all the right people involved in the process. So at the end of the day, the industry said in mass, let's go get rid of PASPA.
Right.
It wasn't about Jeff. It wasn't about AGA. It was about a process where the industry embraced that. I think if we could do online gaming all over again, we might be able to get to a similar, better outcome on that front. But that's not possible.
Sure.
But I hope what we showed on sports is what can be done when you're willing to be transparent, when you're willing to be inclusive, and when you're willing to go through the exhaustive and often painful process it takes to develop consensus.
Okay, great. Let's talk about the sports betting then. I think we all perceive that sports betting could have been good, is good for the industry, but there could have been a vision. The Nevada companies could have said, you know, we're going to lose our monopoly on this. We're not going to support that. So did you have a role in smoothing that over, or was it kind of the greater good that came out of that?
No, I think we had one of our board members ask early on, Nevada guys, where are you? Because if you're gonna say over our dead body, then we're not gonna invest any of our energy in this.
Right.
This was a non-Nevada company saying this, so that was certainly an issue. And you mentioned, you know, we want to protect our monopoly.
Right.
That was an attitude early on.
Yeah.
Until shown the compelling data that demonstrated there is no monopoly.
Right.
It's a monopoly in name only.
Sure,
because
the
illegal market in these other places,
exactly.
You're the only ones who can't go offer sports betting in Pennsylvania. Bovada has no problem doing it.
Right, yeah.
Other illegal sites have no problem doing it. So I think it was when the eyes were open to that that there was a greater willingness. But I give the Nevada-centric companies, particularly LVS and Wynn, companies that don't have a big presence outside Nevada in the United States, a lot of credit for seeing the big picture on this issue and being willing to proceed. Of course, when you look at MGM and Caesars, you know, they can hedge, right? Because they've got properties in Nevada, but dozens of properties outside Nevada.
Right.
So there was a more obvious benefit for that. But LVS and Wynn, I give a great deal of credit for seeing the big picture on this issue. And without their support, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Sure. So one of the things I think that was so impressive in the campaign for sports betting was the partnerships that you created with so many diverse organizations, the law enforcement, you know, the financial industry, and things of that nature. And of course, you've done that with the other issues as well, with the AML issue and the squat tax issue. So do you believe this is really the way to go, to be that inclusive with people who are not even in the gaming industry and who understand the issues?
First of all, I think no matter what industry you are, to the extent that you can have partners in pursuing various goals, you're going to be strong. We also have to understand that we are not a white hat industry.
Right.
And if we go and try to push things that are just about the casino industry, our odds of success are far less than if we're doing that in partnership with other compelling and credible organizations. So that is an approach here. It's an approach that matters. I think with sports betting, we have the benefit of this being an issue, a business opportunity, where the benefit of that goes far beyond the casino betting industry.
Right.
You know, leagues, owners, broadcasters, advertisers all stand to benefit financially from the success of sports betting. You take a look, again, at online gaming. One of the issues we had there is it was the casino industry pushing it, and the casino industry, AGA included, never effectively made a case as to how this would benefit others other than ourselves. And I don't see a lot of appetite to do things that just help the casino industry.
Sure. Right.
But when you can develop those partners and speak about things in terms of what's good for others, you can get some great things done.
Right. So I think I had to see you address the sports betting issue a dozen times at least, and your argument seemed to get refined as you went along. I mean, it made a lot more sense, and then when you really focused on the failure of the PASPA law, I think that really pushed it over the edge. How did that happen in your view as you went along?
Well, you know, we started working on the issue in 2014, mm-hmm. and we certainly became smarter over time. We did refine our message. And the one thing that everybody could agree on and nobody could argue with is that we have a huge illegal market, and that's not doing anybody any good.
Mm.
And that's where you saw that message really get refined. It's refined now.
Right, sure.
As leagues go out there and push things that add undue cost to a legal market, we're able to talk about what effect that has and how that drives the consumer to the illegal market. So I think that, you know, the ability to talk about an illegal market, the size of the illegal market, you saw the research we did constantly out there sizing that market. It was a winning message, and I think that worked. You know, I'm while some might be surprised, there's humility here, and I recognize that if it wasn't for New Jersey, if it wasn't for Chris Christie, if it wasn't for some of the other folks who invested in the litigation.
Senator Lesniak to begin with.
Senator Lesniak, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Right.
And I completely acknowledge and give them a great deal of credit.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe the fact that we were able to take this issue more mainstream and have a broader discussion, really drive a narrative far beyond New Jersey, where the whole country is kind of talking about the illegal market and they're seeing coverage of that. I'd like to think that that played some role here in where we are.
Well, I think it's certainly still having an impact. Just today, we saw two other states legalize online sports betting, with Mississippi and Rhode Island coming into the fold. How do you see sports betting progressing now in the U.S.?
We saw several states come on this year. We saw New York didn't get it done. I think this thing's going to take off very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You've already seen more states have interest in this than had in the online gaming issue, even with
Absolutely.
That being legal for them to pursue today. I think it's going to take off quickly. I think that there will be a lot of mistakes made.
Mm-hmm.
I think there will be a lot of mistakes in terms of policy, a lot of mistakes in terms of structure, and that's something we need to excuse me, I'm going to sneeze on the podcast.
I will edit that out.
That's something we need to minimize as much as possible, some of the mistakes that will be made. But this is going to be a process.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a learning process.
Right.
States are going to need, like Pennsylvania, to realize that bad policy doesn't lead to bad business, it leads to no business.
Right.
And that's what they're going to get up in Pennsylvania. Ideally, leagues in the industry would be working together because we have so much in common here. To do the right thing, to get consistent policy across state lines, to improve speed to market. But I'm not holding my breath on that happening in the near future. But I think it's going to take off quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take time for the market to mature. And there's certainly going to be mistakes and a lot of there's winners and losers, but unfortunately probably a few more losers in the early years of this thing. I will mention, and there are many people in the industry who are far more expert on the business side than me, I think a lot of people are under sizing what this market will be. I think when you look at it through the lens of a brick and mortar casino and a sports book in Nevada, you get one idea of sports betting. I think when you look at this in a much more modern, high tech way, you get a completely different image, and I think that's where things are going.
Exactly. I've had people ask me if we're going to have those huge sports books in Atlantic City. Is it not going to be huge? Everybody's going to be betting on their phone, and they'll have nice sports bars, that's for sure. And I saw at the Ocean Resort they're building a beautiful sports bar along with William Hill, so I think that's where you're going to see it going, and not the big huge sports bar.
I agree, and I think that as New Jersey has proven, they can use online gaming to attract people into the properties, and I think that's what will happen. People will use their loyalty loyalty accounts. They'll develop new relationships. They'll give them reasons to come into the casino. But I'll be using my Borgata M-Life account while I'm watching a ball game and betting whether the next pitch is a ball or strike and doing a side bet on double play.
Yeah.
And it's going to give me a whole new way of interacting with the casino.
So your most recent effort that I'm really impressed with is a responsible gaming effort where you brought together a lot of diverse elements in the field. I mean, there are several different responsible gaming groups that do good jobs on their own, but they're kind of in a silo. We got companies who are more progressive than others when it comes to identifying responsible gaming, and you're bringing everything under one umbrella here. Was there a catalyst behind that?
There is. People often ask me, what is the next growth opportunity for the industry? Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, the next growth opportunity is to remove some of the billions and billions of dollars of waste and inefficiency mm-hmm. that's built into the industry through bad policy and regulation. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that bad policy and regulation, the source of that bad policy and regulation, most of it comes back to one issue. Mm-hmm. And that one issue is not the fear of crime, it's not the fear of traffic, it's not the fear of whatever the critics have said for years, it's the issue of addiction. Mm-hmm. And it's the issue of addiction that leads to a lot of inefficient policy, tying our hands in terms of how we can offer the customer a more modern experience, looking at cashless gaming and other things. If we don't address that issue of addiction, then we can't unlock some of these big opportunities and some of the areas for savings that we're interested in. So as we look at the issue of responsible gaming and what the industry has done, I'm of the opinion that we've been pretty defensive on the issue. We look at it as a cost of doing business, so every company does their own thing, and we take the policy that gets handed to us by policymakers. Rather than, I think, being much more proactive here and beginning to own the issue, beginning to say, here are 3, 4, 5 programs that actually work mm-hmm. and help those who have or may have a problem.
Right.
Let's do these things. Mm-hmm. So rather than having a debate in Maryland about how close an ATM machine can be to a slot machine, the state says 7 feet, the industry says 15 feet, and they compromise at 11 feet, mm-hmm. and they've done nothing to help the consumer.
Right.
Let's have informed discussions mm-hmm. That aren't about the number of feet that an ATM is, that has nothing to do, but on things that will really help people. If self-exclusion matters, then let's talk about self-exclusion. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a national self-exclusion database where if somebody says they don't want to do this in Michigan, great. We take you out everywhere, not just within our company, within the industry. If there are things that work, let's begin to own those things so that we as an industry develop credibility on the issue of responsible gaming. And as we develop credibility, we're able then to unlock better policies, get rid of some of the things that are inefficient. I think that's a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
To have that credibility, we need to work with other partners.
Okay.
And that's why we're working with other gaming organizations. We're working with the National Council on Problem Gambling and NCRG. We're working with academic interests. We need to bring everyone together, embrace good policy, and I think the industry will be a lot stronger for it.
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of regulations being implemented that have no basis in fact, that there's no research behind it. They just think this is a good idea, like the ATM distance, you know.
But we can't sit back as an industry and always tell somebody else that their ideas are bad.
Right.
Right? Okay. Yes, their idea is bad, so we should do fill in the blank.
Right.
We need to come up with what fills in that blank. I think as an industry, if you're just saying what doesn't work, you're missing a big opportunity to pivot to an environment that you'd rather be operating in.
Well, I think under your term, AGA has always done research right from day one, but under your term, I think you used it way more proactively in terms of going out to the individual communities and pointing out exactly how gaming has impacted the community, whether it be community involvement by the employees and the executives or taxes or charitable donations and things of that nature. What was the thought behind that and the Get to Know Gaming campaign?
Yep. We, the team here is sick of me saying it, but we like to say that perception drives policy. And policy doesn't happen by accident. It happens because there's a point of view about our industry. We need to create an informed point of view. And nothing can help us do that more than research. Nothing can help us do that more than telling the story of this industry. I've worked in several industries. I've worked in the tobacco industry. I've worked in the health insurance industry. I've worked in the travel industry and pharmaceutical industry and so on. Several of those black hat industries. But we always found a way to tell a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I joke that the benefit of this industry, working in this industry, is that the the stories we tell are actually true.
Right.
And I'm joking when I say that, but the stories we have in this industry are good stories.
Right.
I was just, you know, Jim Murren and I were together earlier this week, and we were talking about Get to Know Gaming and some of the storytelling. Look at the markets in which we're doing business. Mm-hmm. The critics aren't there.
Right.
The relationship with the local elected officials, with nonprofit groups, with other organizations is remarkably strong. When Sands went and tried to do their property in Bethlehem, small businesses came out in droves and tried to block that. Mm-hmm. When they went for their relicensing hearing, there wasn't a single opponent that showed up. We've got a great story to tell. Our critics only reside in the markets in which we don't do business. Mm-hmm. We got to capitalize on that.
Right.
And I think that's why you've seen AGA so aggressively telling that story. It has to be a campaign in perpetuity. I wish we would have had more resources to tell that story. And I hope, really hope, that the organization doesn't pull back on that in any way, because it is critical to creating a more informed policy environment, to making sure the industry is treated like a mainstream business.
Right, right. I think another proof of that was a couple of years ago, Iowa had a chance to revisit the legalization of the casinos in the counties where they are legal. And you know, the referendums that were passed by 75% or more of the people voting. So I think that was a real a point that the industry should be proud of.
Absolutely, the industry should be proud. What I notice, though, sometimes in the industry, particularly people who've been in the industry for a long time, and I'm sure you've seen this, they feel beaten down. Mm-hmm. They feel beat up by the critics because they've been fighting all these years. And they actually don't realize, some of them don't realize, we're in a new environment.
Right.
The public likes the industry. Mm-hmm. The acceptance rate for the industry is as high as it's going to get, but we still have kind of this this feeling we got to be on our heels and ready to fight. And sometimes fighting isn't what the industry needs to do. Mm-hmm. We're a mainstream business and should be working with the local chamber of commerce, working with all the other respected businesses, because that's who we are, that's the value that we drive.
Sure, right. So do you get a sense that the AGA board is kind of going to reevaluate the direction of the organization now with your departure?
Well, I think that change is an obvious time to evaluate the direction of the organization and where you want to go. I know that, and it will be announced soon, the executive committee has chosen a 7-member search committee, and I know from my senses, from the conversations that have taken place, is that they very much like the trajectory of the organization, and they want to maintain that trajectory. So as they look for a successor, they're certainly not looking for someone who's going to come in and say, here are all the ways I would change it.
Right.
Here's all the ways I would take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. That will be the winning message.
Right.
Because I think they're quite confident that the foundation of a modern, progressive trade association has been built, and now it's about perfecting that.
Okay. So when you came on, you replaced a legend in his own time, Frank Fahrenkopf. And I know you maintained a relationship with him down through these 5 years here. What did he tell you when you first came in that really was helpful?
You know, Frank told me a lot of things that were very helpful. And as you said, Frank's remained a friend, and we stay in close touch, and I appreciate that opportunity. You know, one of the things that Frank said, and it's an obvious point, but you can never forget it. And that is that the board members you're working with, the others who are participating with you, they've got their own day job. Mm-hmm. They've got their own things they need to do.
Right.
It's not personal when people aren't involved in a board meeting or they're not involved in working groups or other things you're doing. They've got their own job, which is why the association has to lead. Not lead without input, but recognize that people have their own job. They've given you their point of view. Don't wait for them now for permission to do various things. You've got to lead.
Right.
And I think we've been pretty good at that. You certainly, when you have the courage to lead, you also better have the intestinal fortitude to make mistakes, because you will, and we have. And I hope the organization will continue to do that, because that's just part of leadership. But Frank was tremendously helpful at understanding various personalities in the industry. He remains in touch with me as he hears things. It's just an invaluable resource. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that, you know, Frank built a foundation where the industry could expand. Mm-hmm. You know, the major expansion of the industry happened on Frank's watch.
Right.
You know, between Frank and Harry Reid, an environment was created where the industry was protected. Mm-hmm. What we did during my chapter here is we pivoted to offense. We didn't have to protect as much as we could promote.
Right.
And that wouldn't have been possible without the foundation that had been built.
Mm-hmm. Great. So do you have any advice you offer your successor, whoever that may be?
you know, we'll. I look forward to that opportunity, and I hope they're interested in my point of view. I'll look forward to working with them. I think that it is natural that whomever comes in is going to put their imprint on the organization. They've got an incredible team here at AGA with whom they can do that, and I'm happy to provide any assistance if they're interested.
Right. So tell us about the challenges with your new organization, the Grocery Manufacturers Association.
Yeah, God, what a terrible name, right?
It is.
So the industry I'm going to is PepsiCo and Coke, Kellogg's, ConAgra, a multi-trillion dollar industry of all the brands that you know and you love. It's a staid industry, some might say, a more stodgy industry, just over decades and decades.
Right.
Of doing what they do.
The association is over 100 years old, Lori.
Yeah.
That's
But consumer packaged goods, you know, and just different challenges. Mm-hmm. The organization's fallen on hard times.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost a number of members. Mm-hmm. They are believed to have fallen out of touch with the consumer. So we've got a lot of work to do to reinvent an organization, a different challenge than we had here at AGA. But the lessons I learned here, I think, will be tremendously applicable. And this opportunity wouldn't be there for me were it not for the team here and the successes we've had with the industry.
So I guess you're excited about it then.
I'm very excited. I love challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, as you said at the outset, this is bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
AGA is a great place. We're here in the AGA office today. It's a great, comfortable place to do your work every day. I've enjoyed it, but I really enjoy building things.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the court ruled so decisively on sports betting made it a much easier decision for me than to go and build the next thing.
Right.
I look forward to doing that, and I hope that I left AGA in a better place today than it would have been otherwise.
Right. Well, you know, I've been involved with the AGA since its inception, seen it grow, and I think you've done a great job in the 5 years you were here, and I want to thank you for the industry for that time you did, and good luck in your new venture. And
thank
please,
you, Roger.
Don't be a stranger.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos and now sports betting in North America. To learn more about the service, visit iGamingPlayer.com/join. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can learn more about this and all subjects related to gaming by visiting GGBMagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, visit GGBNews.com and follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. That's it for today. We'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast.